That was the legendary Freddie Mercury and Montserrat Caballé singing Barcelona. They say be careful what you wish for. Barcelona residents were among the first to tell tourists to stay away because they felt over-touristed. About 8.1 million tourists visited the city last year. Well, there are no tourists in this great Spanish city now. No queues outside the Sagrada Familia. Now the locals are bemoaning the loss of billions of dollars in tourism revenue as a second wave of COVID-19 hits the country, with 566,000 infections and almost 30,000 deaths. Graham Kemlow speaks to UK-born journalist and guidebook author Esme Fox, who's lived there for 5 years, about life under the pandemic.
Welcome to Travel Writers Radio, Esme.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you've been living there for 5 years in Barcelona, such a wonderful city. I know at one stage the locals were just a little concerned that the city was being overrun with tourists. Is that still a prevalent thought there?
Not right now with COVID. It's basically empty here. You can go to the Sagrada Familia and there's nobody else there. You can go to some of the Gaudi houses and they're almost completely empty.
Wow.
Yeah, they're really suffering here at the moment from the lack of tourists. I think they really realise, you know, that they need them.
Be careful what you wish for, hey?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, those things are things that I did, what you've just mentioned, and I've had about three visits to Barcelona and I really love it. So you've been there 5 years. You were based in the UK. Was it a deliberate decision to go to Spain? And if so, why?
Yeah, well, I was working for a travel website in London and they said I could just work remotely after a few years of working there. So I decided to move to Granada. I love Spain and I'd been here a lot of times before. So I lived for a year in Granada and then the company folded, so I was made redundant. And I thought, well, I'll try and go freelance, but Granada's not really a very good place to do it from, so I wasn't really getting many connections there, so I decided to move to Barcelona.
Yeah, probably a good call, I think. I know Granada's a very, very popular tourist spot, but it was so popular we bypassed it because we couldn't get into the Citadel, is that what the correct name, down there?
They have the Alhambra Palace.
Yeah, the Alhambra Palace. Yeah. We just couldn't get in, and I thought, oh, you know, it's too hard. I didn't want to hang around.
Yeah.
So we sort of bypassed it and thought, we'll go back there one day. So have you travelled? You've travelled pretty widely around Spain then, Esme?
Yeah, I'd done kind of the interrail around the whole of Spain, and I had actually lived in Barcelona a year before when I was younger doing English teaching, so I knew the city already.
Right, and that's a popular thing for, English speakers to do, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
They do it a lot around different places in Europe or Asia,
Now, I just want to also ask you about the separatist movement. We saw the situation here. I know it's a highly charged issue in Spain, in Madrid, but also in Barcelona.
Definitely.
Is it still on the front page of the newspapers or has it sort of calmed down a bit now?
No, I think support for the movement kind of waned a bit during the coronavirus crisis because that was just the front page of everything. But today is actually Catalan National Day, so I'm sure that it will kind of surge a bit after this because that always kind of gets movement going and heated discussions again. So
will I be in the streets waving the Catalan flag, do you think?
Yeah, usually they have a big protest where they all kind of gather together either on a main road or a roundabout or some kind of huge area. But I'm not sure that they're actually allowed to do that now because they're not allowed to be all together, obviously.
Yeah.
So there'll probably just be people wandering around either wearing the flag or flying it or wearing political T-shirts or something like that.
Right, fair enough. I guess when you have states like that, we have in Australia, as you know, you've been in Melbourne, different states have a different approach to things, and we are certainly witnessing that here in Australia. Now, just talk to me a little bit about COVID. I know that Spain was listed fairly high early in proceedings. What's happened there now? What sort of numbers do you have? Have you got sort of recent numbers?
In terms of total, it's about 500,000. So it's a lot.
Wow, yeah.
But that's since the beginning, I think.
Okay. So. And are the hospitals coping?
They weren't really during kind of April, March time.
Yeah.
They had to build extra, like, field hospitals, as it were, in different spaces.
Yes.
Now they're not so bad. Although there's as many cases now as there were before, there's not as actually many hospitalizations as there was before.
Right.
So it's still bad, but not as bad in terms of the severity of it.
Right. So are you in any form of lockdown, or what are the restrictions on your movement?
We can meet up to 10 people at a time, and most things are open now apart from nightlife venues.
Right.
So they've closed all of those, and you're not allowed to drink in the street, which is quite popular among the...
Yes, it is.
Here.
Yeah.
Called the botellón.
Do you have to wear masks or socially distance?
Yeah, we have to wear masks all the time, outside, wherever you are, mask on, which has actually been really difficult during August because we've had really high temperatures.
Yeah.
Most of us can't really breathe properly through the masks, but you have to keep them on. So
can you go to the beach?
Yeah, you can go to the beach. You are allowed to take your mask off at the beach.
Right.
When you're actually lying down or sunbathing. And you are also allowed to take your mask off at restaurants, obviously, and bars. So.
Is there any form of national control, or is it all up to the states?
We did have national control up until when the state of alarm ended. But now it's ended, then the individual states now have control over what they can do and can't do.
Right. And do you feel at all under threat?
Not really. We kind of...
You're in that age group that doesn't seem to be at risk?
Not really, but I just feel that we're doing things safely, and so I don't really feel that we're putting ourselves at risk too much. We do travel on the metro and things like that, though, which obviously there's a slight risk. But we don't go inside restaurants, for example. We're only eating on the terraces because
right.
There's less risk of transmission than inside. So I feel that we're just not putting ourselves at risk as some people would be.
Yeah, fair enough, Esme. So with your journalism, I guess you'd be doing a lot of phone interviews rather than face-to-face, would you?
Yeah, I've been doing quite a few of those, although my work has gone down significantly since the crisis. So.
Yeah. Now, you were saying to me off-air that you have written some guidebooks to Spain or to parts of Spain. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I did the Rough Guide to Spain part of that. And then I was doing this next edition of that just before lockdown as well.
Oh, okay.
So I did the Valencia region.
Yeah.
And Castilla-León region as well.
Okay.
The last one. And then the one just now, I was doing all of it.
So will you pick that back up after COVID, do you think?
I hope so, although Rough Guides is struggling a lot. So we'll kind of see what happens after COVID happens.
But, yeah, those guidebooks are incredibly handy for people who are travelling. Like, it's great to have an app, you know, on your phone, but frankly,
yeah.
I think it's quicker to look up the index, turn to the page and read it, because by the time you type a search word in, and my fat fingers end up, you know, I'm not a good typist on the phone. I've got a big phone too, but I'm not so good at that. But I say guidebooks I still think are incredibly valuable, and I had one girl talk to me on radio a couple of years ago, and her little thing was that she'd buy a guidebook for a city, and she was backpacking, so she'd leave it in the hostel for the next person to come along, and she wrote a message in the front, and she got lots of messages back. She could tell that her book had been read and passed on and read and passed on. So that was a lovely thought on her part, and I guess hearing back from people was a nice reward for her generosity in doing that. Do you see yourself staying in Spain for the foreseeable future, Esme?
Yeah, hopefully. If I can continue making freelance work here, then I think definitely I really love it here.
Oh, well, I mean, we can obviously tell people here in Melbourne and Australia that there's somebody who can write out of Spain for them if they want to, they want some perspective on what's going on over there at the moment. The Spanish are a lovely people, though. They'd be a bit of fun to deal with, I reckon.
Yeah, they're really fun and nice. I've had a lot of good times with people here, so yeah.
Yeah. Now, we also cover food on this show, Esme, so what's your favourite Spanish food?
It's kind of a bit difficult because I'm vegetarian and there's not a lot of Spanish vegetarian food, but I guess it would have to be the paella because they do really good vegetarian paellas here. So
you don't eat fish? You don't eat
no,
fish?
No, I don't eat fish either.
So you're full-on vegetarian?
Yeah, I write about Spanish food all the time. Like, I know all the different names of the fish. I know all the names of the dishes. I know, like, how to cook them, but I don't eat them.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, that's a choice, and it's probably a very healthy choice. I think some of us eat too much of the wrong thing, but pretty hard to go wrong with vegetarian, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been a vegetarian since I was 3, so it's just kind of ingrained into me now. I'm not sure I could change back.
I understand. I understand. Well, I think it's great to have you there, Esme, and it might be a really good opportunity if we can talk to you about some of the other things that are available in Spain for the Australian visitor. Do you think Aussie visitors would go down all right in Spain?
Yeah, definitely. I think Spain needs all the tourists they can get at the moment, so I think they would welcome them with open arms, and I think Aussie visitors would really like it here as well.
I think we've learned to party softly now. We've had lots of introspection over the last 6 months, particularly in Melbourne, because, you know, we're virtually under lock and key. But I've really enjoyed Spain when I was there. I went to this fantastic restaurant that I expected Zorro to come swinging round the corner on a big long velvet curtain and wave his sword in the air. Do you know the place I was talking about?
I've seen that restaurant. I haven't been there, but I've walked past it. Yeah.
Oh, you're definitely worth it. We save up your shekels because it's not cheap. But they virtually bought out a whole side of lamb and carved it up for us. We had about half a dozen of us at dinner, and they cut it up in front of us, and it was a big baronial-looking dining hall. I don't know what the original house would have been. It's certainly a grand house, and it's in the foothills.
And on the foothills of the Tibidabu.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And they have a lot of big mansions there and a lot of like rich Catalans. A lot of those have been turned into embassies now.
Yeah, I was going to say
medical centres
I thought it might have been an embassy just by the sheer size of it and the big reception room and everything. But
there's definitely a lot around there, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a great city, and even having been there 3 times, there's plenty I still would like to go back and explore. So I will look forward to perhaps having a chance to talk to you again, Esme, about the situation over there, maybe some of your favourite places to go, not just in Barcelona, but, you know, nearby. I enjoyed getting around. I didn't have much difficulty. We drove, actually. My wife and I drove around Spain, right down the east coast and curled up around, eventually getting back to Madrid. We were on secondary roads, and I thought, wow, these secondary roads are pretty good. But when we ended up on a main road, I couldn't believe how slow I was driving. There were cars going past. They must have been doing 150. So I was quite happy to get back onto the secondary road where I might have only been doing 110. Anyway, Esme, thank you so much for your time. Now, if people would like to get in touch with you, maybe someone out there with a writing job, can they see a website or send you a mail? What's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, I've got a website. It's esmefox.com, and my email address is on there.
So okay.
You can get in contact with me.
Esme Fox, ESMEFox.com. Fantastic, yeah. Esme. Thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to chatting to you again.
Thank you.
Graham Kemlow is speaking with Barcelona-based journalist and guidebook author Esme Fox. Contact her at www.esmefox.com.
You're listening to The Travel Writers Show on J-Air 87.8 FM.
That's Travel Writers Radio for this week. We'll be back live at the usual time on Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. and we can be heard on Saturdays between 1 and 3 p.m. on J-Air 87.8 FM in Melbourne.
Travel Writers Radio is a production of Palette, the professional association of lifestyle and travel writers. So, until next week, it's good night from me, Graham Kemlow.
And good night from me, Rita Ehrlich.